We'll move to our next case, which is Davis v. Maroney. Mr. Meneghini.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Michael Meneghini on behalf of Plaintiff Appellant Michael Davis. This Court should vacate and remand for two reasons. First, Mr. Davis is entitled to relief under Rule 60b-6 because the process that resulted in the judgment against him was infirm. He was a pro se prisoner who was denied appointed counsel, but who had severe mental and intellectual disabilities that allowed him to be taken advantage of by the inmate writ writers from whom he sought assistance. There were also periods of delay and inactivity in the case and a lack of guidance from the district court, both of which also contributed to Mr. Davis's procedural lapses. These are extraordinary circumstances warranting relief under Rule 60b-6, and certainly no less so, we think, than this court's decision in Donald v. Cook County.
Well, you're not appealing, though, on his failure to have appointed counsel, are you?
No, Your Honor, not directly, but that is one circumstance that contributes to the overall, the entire process procedure below and everything that Mr. Davis faced and why he is entitled to relief under 60b-6.
Well, the main, the sole issue here was his failure to respond to interrogatories, right? Timely.
That's what ultimately led to the dismissal.
So you got one issue is he gets interrogatories, he's told he has to respond by a certain date, and he doesn't do it.
What were those interrogatories?
Your Honor, the interrogatories were exhaustion interrogatories. Exhaustion interrogatories to see if he had exhausted his administrative remedy, the grievance process. And so they were seeking information.
Well, there are records of that, aren't there?
Yeah,
attached. So why were they asking him?
Your Honor, I don't know. They were in his complaint and attached to a complaint. The exhibits A through G were all, he laid out the grievance process, the procedure, and everything. So they were in the record. Again, they propounded these discovery requests on him. Again, Mr. Davis, pro se, with severe intellectual disabilities that perhaps didn't understand. Yeah,
My point is, even given his IQ, if you accept that, this was two different levels, he was given, here are questions, answer them by a certain date. He can't figure that out?
Well, you're saying he answered them. He had answered them.
Your Honor, I'm saying they were answered. They were in the record. And to Your Honor's question, he alleged that he couldn't figure that out. He didn't understand when he got the legal
but
papers,
he didn't know
what to do.
He had the inmate, quote, lawyer, close quote, help him in something, didn't he?
He did have inmate writers helping him at various points. He was not able to complete any legal papers on his own. So he had inmate writers at various points helping him. Apparently, the initial inmate writer who helped him with a complaint, alleged that because he helped him, he was sent to segregation and couldn't help him. And then so in his 60b-6 motion, what he tells the court is part of the issue is these inmate writ writers who I am entirely dependent on, who have to help me at every single stage and every turn, but they just wanted money from me. And so they wouldn't do anything until I paid them. But when I paid them, they stopped. They wouldn't help me anymore because they got their money. And so that it's one of the issues that Mr. Davis raised in his 60b-6 motion that we think is part of the extraordinary circumstances here that warrant relief. And additionally, Your Honors, so in addition to his pro se status, his IQ, mental and intellectual disabilities, his situation with the inmate writ writers who he's entirely dependent on, there's also these periods of delay and activity in the case, and also just a lack of guidance from the district court here. I think this court has been clear in some of its decisions in Donald, and also more recently in Beal v. Foster, where this court has said that it's incumbent on district courts, and it's a duty to help pro se litigants and to provide some guidance and assistance along the way, trying to navigate a difficult legal process.
It sounds a lot like a civil Gideon. Right, we haven't gone that. A civil Gideon, a right to appointed counsel at public expense in civil cases. Right.
No, Your Honor, we're not asking for an automatic right here, or that civil litigants aren't entitled as a matter of right, and we don't think that this court would have to hold so. It can be, it's a very narrow issue here with these under these facts and these circumstances. And if the district judge determines that a civil litigant is capable of handling their case to a certain degree and can't has effective communication and verbal skills and understanding, there still can help. Even though the civil litigant maybe doesn't need appointed counsel, they could still help them a lot with some of the procedural.
If the district judge had asked Winston and Strawn, could they provide a lawyer for him in the district court, would Winston and Strawn have said okay?
I think this was in the central district. We don't practice down there, but I'm sure there are law firms. There are.
Well, I was thinking specifically firms like Winston and the other big firms in Chicago. Are they willing to lend, say, a very junior lawyer to help what is otherwise a pro se?
Yes, Your Honor, I think they are, and I can only really speak for Winston here, but I know Winston has a robust pro bono program, and we do are often appointed by courts, and we do take them.
I assume that's what you're doing now, right?
Your Honor, is what I'm doing. And so we do, Winston does actively promote to try to get young associates supervised by partners. So there are law firms
in the trial courts?
Willing, I'm sorry?
In the trial courts or on appeal?
At all levels.
I would think the firm would benefit from having young associates get some trial experience.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's Winston's view of it as well. Yeah. And so, again, we do think there are various avenues where a court can appoint a counsel to assist an inmate such as Mr. Davis, who has alleged very severe limitations. And even if they don't, and even if it doesn't rise to that level where, you know, we don't need appointed counsel perhaps at this stage, maybe a later stage we'll revisit it, the district court should still kind of help the pro se litigant along and make sure they're understanding what's going on and they're properly engaging with the legal process and not just looking to
this. This was answer the interrogatories within a certain number of days. That was it, right?
Yes, Your Honor, that's what ultimately led to
that's
the
not,
dismissal.
I don't know, what's the court supposed to say beyond that?
Your Honor, it was clear, but I think there's some back and forth here that was going on throughout this period where Mr. Davis was filing a motion. It was getting rejected in a very cursory fashion. He was then responding to whatever deficiency. He thought he was doing kind of what he needed to do. He was trying to get appointed counsel. He was trying to tell the court that I need help. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I really need help here. And he was trying to respond to whatever deficiency the court pointed out in denying his previous motion. He would try to address that in the next one. And so this was his way of prosecuting his case, was trying to get help. He wasn't just neglecting his case. He was trying to file papers. He simply, in the court's view, was just missing the mark here without any assistance.
He has an IQ of 73, is that correct?
He alleged a 66, Your Honor.
66?
Yeah.
Now, what kind of educational background does he have? How far did he go in school?
It's not in the record, but he does allege that he has he reads at a sixth grade level.
You say reads at sixth grade level?
Reads at a sixth grade level was another allegation that he made in needing counsel.
Mr. Mangini, can I ask? Does anybody have any medical records indicating severity of injuries in this encounter with Mr. Maroney?
No, Your Honor, there's no medical records in the record. Mr. Davis wanted to get them in the record. He alleged that he had submitted the release form that he needed, but the institution wasn't giving to them. So he, in one of his motions, he asked the court for help. You know, obviously,
was he treated medically after the attack that he alleged?
I think the record's unclear of whether he was treated for that.
Here's my concern, because we can we might be able to send this back and say, in essence, try again, give him some more help. Perhaps your firm would provide that assistance. But ultimately, this is going to come down to, I would think, his testimony and Mr. Maroney's testimony. Plaintiff's own account says that he's paranoid and delusional. It's hard to see a lot of traction in this case.
Your Honor, I think that this was this past merit review. This was a legally.
What that means is that the allegations framed by the writ writer in prison, who was helping Mr. Davis, state a claim for relief. Okay, right? Nothing more than that.
Your Honor, but I think it.
That doesn't mean that there is merit in the case.
But it at least entitles it to proceed and to get to the point where. To get through the initial stages, and I think there's certainly whether or not we think at this stage there's merit, it certainly could go to a jury. A jury could find that there was based if it's just competing testimony, the judge or the jury could listen and hear the witnesses and weigh that evidence
without medical treatment and with the testimony of somebody who describes himself as paranoid and delusional.
Your Honor, I think that just goes to that would go to credibility then of the witness, which
is that are those factors that you think a district judge is prohibited from considering in deciding whether to recruit counsel?
No, Your Honor, I don't think that the judge would be prohibited in.
I don't think so either.
In considering it, but I think the judge should certainly. Do more than what happened here. I think there was no consideration at all. It was just a very cursory Eighth Amendment excessive claims are not unduly complex. Didn't really address Mr. Davis personally, never had any kind of status hearing, a conference call to really even engage and understand, and listen to him and see, whether or not he was individually able to prosecute his case.
Did you say there was no oral hearing?
No.
She never listened to him, or she never.
From the record, Your Honor, it doesn't appear that there was ever a hearing.
That'd require him being taken out of prison, brought to the courthouse, and so forth.
Not necessarily. It could do by phone.
Phone?
Yes. I think there's a local rule in the Central District that says with pro se inmates they will hold status conferences by phone. And I think it's other judges within the circuit, district court judges, do hold phone conferences or video conferences with inmates while they're still in their detention facilities. So if there's no further questions, Your Honors.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Meneghini. Ms. Hunger?
May it please the court, Assistant Attorney General Sarah Hunger on behalf of Appellee Donald Maroney. This court should affirm the judgment of the district court because it did not abuse its discretion in denying Davis's Rule 60B.
Why didn't the judge find a lawyer for this guy? He's totally incompetent.
The district court did not abuse its discretion in.
Well, I don't agree with you. If you have someone who is, it's a serious case, who is incapable of representing himself, shouldn't the judge recruit a lawyer for him? No big deal.
The district court here was looking at the entirety of the record and
determined. But is it true that the judge there never heard from him? That is never had a hearing to evaluate his competence?
The district court never had a hearing on
why
the
not?
Recruitment of counsel issue.
Why not?
The district court is not required.
Why not?
I don't know why the district court did not hold a hearing.
Well, you think it was a good idea not to hold a hearing?
I do not think at that time a hearing was necessary.
Why?
Because.
How could you evaluate this guy without meeting him?
Well, because.
Without hearing from him.
He had put into the record that he had a paranoid delusional disorder, that he had an IQ of 66, that he could read at the sixth grade
yes,
level.
Well,
so the district
be,
judge.
Well, did Judge Darrow accept all those statements?
It appears that the district judge did accept all of those statements.
Well, if she did, got a guy with an IQ of 66?
Well, the district
trying
court,
to conduct the trial without a lawyer? That's ridiculous.
The district court held at this stage it was not necessary. Here...
At this stage? The stage is over. He's lost his case.
At that stage...
And no further stages for him to have a hearing.
That's correct. But if he had complied with the interrogatories, he would have proceeded...
He's a dope. I mean, how is he... How can you say that his failure to comply with the interrogatories is some willful refusal to cooperate with the government?
Well, I think there's a few reasons why...
You don't know what an interrogatory is.
Did the district court ask him to contact the lawyer to see to take the case? Did the district court tell him to find a lawyer if he could?
Yes, that was in the first and second denials of his motions for recruitment of counsel.
How on earth could he find a lawyer?
Well, it shows in his log that he did reach out to several attorneys. So he did make attempts both to smaller law firms and larger law firms in order to get counsel. So he was making those efforts. He was responding to
yes,
the court's
I know,
orders.
But imagine what he sounds like when he's talking to a lawyer and asking for help.
Even if the
district... It would make a big difference if the judge called up a law firm and say, you have this guy who's brought a suit and he seems to have serious psychiatric and IQ issues. Could you lend him a lawyer? That could have an effect. I think law firms will treat a request by a federal judge seriously. But if this guy just calls up and starts raving, he's not going to get a lawyer. I don't understand why judges are so hesitant to ask for a lawyer, try to recruit a lawyer for someone who is obviously incapable of representing himself.
Well, here the district court stated that it was a he said, she said case that was not very complex. So
he did advise the court that he tried to get lawyers and was able to do so.
That's correct. So there was a back and forth between
and
Davis
and the court.
What did the court
tell him after he advised him that he couldn't find him?
Well, then the court moved on to the second Pruitt inquiry and held that although he had satisfied the first Pruitt inquiry, the case was not so complex that he needed an attorney because it was something.
There is case law that says he has to inquire, try to find a lawyer on his own before the court does.
That's correct. So the district court said, you know, he had to show that he had attempted to find a lawyer, and then he did.
You can't separate the simplicity of the case from the simplicity of this guy. The case may not be complex to an ordinary person with an IQ of 100, say, but may be totally beyond the capacity of a person of this level of intelligence to handle.
And that may be.
I don't think that would be so obvious to a judge.
That may be true, but here also that question is not before this court because this court only has appellate jurisdiction over the denial of the Rule 60B motion, which relates exclusively to the interrogatories, not to the underlying issues as to whether or not he should have had a lawyer recruited for him. So here, this court's
they're all
review,
connected, though. I don't know about you. I don't think I'd ever heard of an interrogatory until law school civil procedure class. And as simple as it might be to simply have to have two people come in and give testimony about this incident, or maybe several people give testimony about it, the process of complying with these sorts of orders in the pretrial process can be pretty daunting.
It can be. Here, though, he was sent the interrogatories in March of 2014, then the Assistant Attorney General followed up with a letter further explaining what he needed to do. Then the court issued an order to compel compliance with the interrogatories.
Do we know if he understood any of those communications?
It's not in the record whether or not he understood them.
Suppose he were blind, and he was getting all these records, all these orders and interrogatories in the mail. Mm-hmm. He can't read them? He has to pay somebody to read them?
Well, I suppose that
interpret them for him.
That would go to the assistance that he was receiving at the prison, whether or not he was able through the court system and the prison system to get a copy that he could read or otherwise understand. Here, though, I'd also like to point out something about the grievances. Counsel said that Maroney had already received all of the grievances as they were attached to his complaint, but that's not true. The only timely grievance that Davis alleged that he filed was on July 21st, 2012, and then he filed, I think, an additional 3 grievances. That first grievance, the July 21st, 2012, is the only grievance that's omitted from the complaint. It is not attached. So that is why Maroney was asking for that document or for any other letters or other or any other type of way that he could have exhausted.
You
have
to
ask. And, you know, had he responded and said, I don't understand what this document is, I have no idea what they want from me, then we'd be in a different situation. But he did not respond at all. It is incumbent upon him, and he had the assistance of inmate writ writers at this very time.
Isn't he responding, though, in essence, by saying, please help me get a lawyer?
He's responding by saying, please help me get a lawyer, but it's not tied at all to these interrogatories.
Do you know how the lawyers would be compensated?
If they were recruited?
I
suppose likely not compensated or by the court. If they had been recruited attorneys or...
By the court or from any recovery that they received?
Right. Here it is a 1983 action, so they could be compensated for costs and fees if they had been recruited.
So when you make the inquiry about taking the case, mm-hmm. A reasonable lawyer would evaluate whether or not they had a chance of recovering.
That's correct.
Otherwise, it would be taken for nothing.
Right.
They're not being appointed by the court. Rather,
they're being recruited.
They have to take it on the basis that they'll recover from the successful lawsuit.
Right, that's correct.
Was Mr. Meneghini correct when he said that the information asked for in the interrogatories was actually in his complaint?
No, he was not correct about that. So the grievance that would have been timely filed it related to the incident was not attached to the complaint. Other grievances were attached to the complaint. So there was this conspicuous omission.
Does the defense have that original grievance?
I am not sure if the defense has that original grievance. It may, but the important thing here is that it was asked that Maroney was asking for any copies that Davis would have.
Sure, but and I understand why you have to ask, but given that the prison presumably knows what it has, right?
Right, and I am not sure here. It's not in the record whether or not the prison did look through its documents. But
did what? Whether the prison what?
Looked through its documents before it reached out to Mr. Davis. Presumably it did, and it did not find anything. You know, here it seems that Davis did maintain
his
records.
Well, I don't understand. How would he be expected, how would Davis be expected to respond to the interrogatories if the prison had no information?
Well, Davis would be expected to respond with either a copy of that initial grievance, which would have been the only timely grievance on this issue, or he would have responded with perhaps other efforts that he made
to
exhaust his
administration. Yes, but the grievance had been given to someone, hadn't it?
Yes, but
wasn't it in the prison files?
It's not in the record.
Well, what happened? You just throw this stuff away? Someone files a grievance, you just toss it?
No, this is just part of the discovery.
Well, why
process.
Don't they have the grievance in their files then?
Well, if he didn't actually file the grievance, then they wouldn't have it in their files, and so they would ask for it. Otherwise, they should
have
it.
So you say he didn't file a grievance?
I'm saying he may not have filed a grievance. He may have filed a grievance.
Well, did anyone ask the prison whether they had a grievance from him?
It's not in the record whether or
not. Well, I don't understand that. Why wouldn't that be the obvious thing to do, to find out, is this...
Well, that is one way that the prison could have done this, is look through its records and just move
well,
for summary judgment
way,
immediately.
Well, the other way, asking him is not the best. I don't understand it. Why do you ask this very damaged person for a piece of paper, which presumably is in the prison's files?
Well, because otherwise Maroney would have been moving with incomplete information, just moving for
not
summary judgment.
Not if the complaint is in the prison files,
if
which you don't know. Apparently no one looked. No one cares. Did anyone look for it?
I do not know if anyone at
the
trial
well,
looked for it.
Yeah, well, that's bad.
It was not in the motion to compel, but Maroney was well within his rights to ask Davis for this information before proceeding to summary
what
judgment.
Maroney works for the prison, right?
Yes.
Well, isn't it his responsibility to find out what he can within the prison? He has access, presumably has access to their files.
Within the context of the scheduling order that was set forth, it was going to be, before the case was dismissed, incumbent upon Maroney to look through his files. The orders to compel were entered before that. And so prior to proceeding for summary judgment on the issue
well,
of exhaustion...
Well, did he eventually look through the files?
I'm not certain whether he did. After the case was dismissed, and so he never had to comply with the scheduling order related to the discovery requests. Mm-hmm. It never came to that in the case. The court has no further questions. We ask that it affirm
okay.
the judgment.
Thank you, Ms. Hunger. Mr. Meneghini, do you have anything further?
Thank you, Your Honor. If I could just make three very brief points here. First, with respect to the missing grievance that State now complains about, two, that would be in the State's records. Also, in Mr. Davis's complaint, he alleges that he gave that grievance to his grievance counselor, and part of the issue is that she never processed and returned it, so he filed the subsequent grievances trying to get that. So that's part of his complaint allegations. And as the government also mentions, once the scheduling order was entered, the judge, which entered to help facilitate the process with a pro se litigant, which can be difficult, said that it was the defendant's responsibility to turn over all the grievances and medical records. Second, just like to point that Mr. Davis was trying here. He was trying very hard to respond and to file papers. He was just simply missing the mark here. And the government said it would be different if he had responded to the interrogators that he didn't understand or didn't know what to do. In his Rule 60B6 motion, he did precisely that. He said, I don't know what these are. I don't know what they mean. I don't know what to do with them. And finally, with respect to Your Honor's question about the fees and whether it's contingent with appointed counsel, I know with pro bono counsel, at least with Winston, our policy is we don't
Well, I don't understand pro bono. I'm not talking about pro bono. He's dealing with lawyers around the prison there, and when they take the case, the only way they're going to get recovery is if they win the case, right?
If they were taking it on a contingent basis, many firms take it on a pro bono basis.
Well, many firms like Winston and Strom, but I'm talking about the sole practitioner or the two or three person firm around the prison. They don't take cases just on the chance that they might win, or they don't have a pro bono program like Winston
yeah.
does.
I mean, yes, Your Honor, and maybe those firms would have different policies. But
And if they don't take the case, then it falls on the court to appoint or not to appoint in this type of case, in a civil case.
Yes, and that would fall.
And then the taxpayers pay for it.
And sorry?
Then the taxpayers pay for it. If he can't find counsel.
If a judge reaches out, I know our pro bono, we don't take
it. No, I understand Winston's pro bono thing, which is admirable, and many large firms in Chicago have it. But where the prisons are located, those are not available. And I'm not sure whether you send lawyers down all the way to, say, to Marion or other prisons in the southern part of Illinois to represent yeah. these people. I don't know. Maybe you do.
Your Honor, again, this was never, perhaps the judge would have, there are potential firms that would do this, or again, being part of the trial bar is that you do.
I understand
get
what
back.
The requirement and, is, yeah. but I'm talking about those lawyers who happen to be practicing in areas where prisons are located and the ones apt to be representing defendants.
Yes, Your Honor.
Where is this prison?
The prison?
Where is it?
Pontiac.
I mean, where in
Pontiac.
Illinois?
Pontiac.
Where is Pontiac? Yeah. Is it far?
Yeah, I guess. Your Honor, just the very last thing I'd like to say is just that my boss has said that Winston and Strong would gladly take this this case on an appointed pro bono basis on remand and would gladly for further proceedings.
I'm sure you would take trial. A pro bono, and that's admirable. But you don't want to be taking pro bono cases for every prisoner lawsuit in the state of Illinois, do you? No,
I don't think they'd like me to say yes. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much to both counsel.